Hello, and welcome to the Muslim Sheroes of Minnesota podcast, where we spotlight the Muslim women of the Minnesota community. My name is Nosheena Hussain, and I'm the executive director of RISE, Reviving the Islamic Sisterhood for Empowerment. Our mission is to amplify the voice and power of Muslim women through storytelling, leadership development, and civic engagement. What is a shiro? A shiro is a female trailblazer who is creating change in her community. She takes risks, she challenges misconceptions, and addresses injustices. Shiros are on a mission to build a better world, and the sisterhood is here to support them and lift their voices. Today, I'm joined with Rehab Nahil. Please welcome Rehab.
Yeah, hi.
Thank you for joining us. We wanted to just kind of get to know you a little bit better. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Rehab. I was born in Syria, in Aleppo, the second biggest city in Syria. I was raised in Germany, in the beautiful part of Bavaria. Mm. Yeah, this is in southern Germany on the borders of the Czech Republic. I've been living in Minnesota for over a decade right now. I met my husband. He was in New York during that time. After we married, he found a job in Minnesota as a dentist, and that's where I moved. Mm.
What brought you from Syria to Germany?
My parents, they immigrated to Germany when I was still a toddler.
Okay.
You know, my dad is a physician and my mom is a midwife, you know, pursuing their medical career and all that.
Okay.
And during that time, Germany really was in need of doctors. I mean, they still need a lot of doctors. And my dad just found his future over there, so we stayed.
Okay. And then how did you come from Germany to Minnesota?
Well, I met my husband through a friend. As I told you, you know, he also wanted to pursue his work and his studies as a dentist. Mm-hmm. And he was always aspiring for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He found a job in Minnesota.
What do you do in Minnesota?
I got my master's degree in teaching English as a second language, St. Cloud State University. So I'm an ESL teacher because I have a toddler. I'm subbing, you know, in public schools and also the German preschool. So far, I'm a sub teacher until my daughter goes into kindergarten. Then let's see.
So you're an educator, basically a teacher. What are some challenges that students are facing with English being a second language? What are you seeing in the school system?
Well, it's kind of like being lost, unfortunately. So they came from a different culture, from a different language background. And first they have to get used to, you know, everything. Some different school system. They have to find new friends. And it's very difficult and hard when you can't communicate with anyone. I mean, you have to learn everything. You have to learn even the humor of people. I mean, I studied English literature before I came here. I knew how to speak English very well, but still I had to struggle to understand, oh, this is how Americans think. This is how, what they laugh at. This is so different. I mean, this is how, what they perceive as, you know, that's appropriate and that's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. Because some things are very different from German, and that is a Western culture.
Mm.
So I can't imagine, you know, kids that come from either Asia or Africa or the Middle East, where some things are very similar, but some things are very different.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to get used to it. But the good thing about Minnesota is that, you know, the ESL teachers and the system, they're just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what they do with the kids, from welcoming them, having some special education programs for them, it's just amazing. I mean, within years, immigrant children, they just speak fluently English. They have new friends and they have a new perspective in life. So that's amazing.
ESL teachers aren't just teaching a new language, but they're also teaching culture, and they're teaching how to assimilate into the new environment. They're more than a teacher to some of these students.
Yes, yes. I mean, they guide them all the way and they become like a friend. Yes.
Yeah. Where are some of these refugee and immigrant children coming from?
Well, of course, we have a large Somali population here, but also a lot of Hmong, so Asian kids, and just newly arrived Syrian refugees. So that really hits home.
Okay.
So we have some Syrian refugees in Rochester. It's just, you know, three families. So it's not a lot. We have one new family here, and they arrived about 2-3 years ago, those mm-hmm. from Rochester, and their kids, yeah, they are very fluent in English right now, and they're just, you know, starting to live the American dream.
So for some of our mm-hmm. listeners who may not be aware of what's happening in, like, in Syria right now, can you help describe a little bit of what's going on there that's forcing people to flee and become refugees?
Well, the thing is that, you know, Syria has always been very welcoming to different cultures, different religions, and even refugees. Mm-hmm. So Syria welcomed refugees from Iraq, from Lebanon, mm-hmm. Palestine, African countries, going back to Armenians, to a lot of Christians who were persecuted. So it's a very multicultural, diverse society mm-hmm. in Syria. But what has happened is that, you know, some Syrians got inspired by the Arab Spring mm-hmm. that happened, you know, 2010. They started asking for just more freedom, more dignity, because, you know, most Middle Eastern countries, they are ruled by a dictator, sort of
monarchy.
Dictatorship. Yeah. Yes, or monarchy. So what happened is that just, of course, you know, the government wasn't too happy about that. So they started shooting at demonstrators. They started kidnapping families. That's where some peaceful protesters started, you know, arming themselves, and everything just blew up. Some countries decided to stay silent and not do anything, and some countries just, whatever their profit was of their gain, mm-hmm. you had then Russia, Iran, Qatar, mm-hmm. and Saudi Arabia. So each part of the world was just supporting one group. And then, of course, we had ISIS. So it was just, you know, just a big mess. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the people there are in the midst of all that. They lost their homes. They lost a lot of loved ones. A lot of children died of starvation because of the siege. And yeah, they had to flee. For the mm-hmm. first time, Syrians had to flee, mm-hmm. and then they were the refugees.
That's heartbreaking and horrifying to hear. Now I notice that you are part of an organization called CISPOS, the Committee in Solidarity with the People of Syria. Tell me more about this organization. When did it get started? What your mission is, and what kinds of work are you doing?
Well, you know, it got all started by the two masterminds, Terry Berg and Andrew Bergman. Mm-hmm. I mean, these two people are just amazing. I bet they haven't met any Syrian before, and they immediately just gave us their support and started all that. I met Terry at a debate in a church. It was about, well, Syria, and should the United States do anything about it? Mm-hmm. So we had a Syrian doctor who actually, you know, based on facts, gave a presentation on everything what's happening. And then you had the other group with some obscure conspiracy theories who were against any involvement of the United States. I mean, even peaceful talks. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of made this doctor as a liar. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when Terry and Andrew really digged more and asked the Syrian community, hey, what's going on? And when they learned about the truth and what's a civil war and nonviolent demonstrations that were happening over there, and then the whole world that was just watching, I mean, they just gave us their support. And our mission is to educate people mm-hmm. about Syria, about the Syrian people. Mm-hmm. It's just to talk about the background of all of this, what happened before, what's happening right now. I mean, that is really left out in the media, and something that's not correctly portrayed, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So how do you help the people?
Well, we are a grassroots organization, so we support the people of Syria, whether it's medical aid, whether it's financial aid. We collaborate with a lot of social justice and faith organizations. We bring awareness to this country. We started with small political discussions, either in small cafes or university. Mm-hmm. We collaborated with a lot of churches. We also organized fundraisers for organizations such as SAMS, which is the Syrian American Medical Society, mm-hmm. that brings medical help for people in Syria and around Syria. I mean, what they've done is just amazing work. Mm-hmm. I mean, they also do a lot of work that's international, so not only Syria. They also helped here for the hurricane relief in mm-hmm. the United States and all that. Mm-hmm. We helped the Syrian Forum Rahma Relief Foundation and Watan, which Watan is based in Turkey. It's building schools and small businesses for Syrians to help them help themselves. There are a lot of orphans over there, a lot of single mothers, you know, who do crocheting or whatever work that they can do, and then they can sell it internationally. We helped organize and participate the hunger strike when Syrians were living under siege and literally starving to death. We were inspired by some people in Ireland and also in other places in the United States. We had a lot of participants who were famous, like Noam Chomsky, Keith Ellison, and kind of the fun part of it, it's potlucks for welcoming Syrian refugees. Okay. We have done that so they feel welcome, they can meet other Syrians or other Muslims from the community, but also a lot of Americans, you know. We had a lot of people from the Women's March, we had a lot of people from Plymouth Church. We had a potluck for Dar al-Farouk Mosque that was bombed in Bloomington. We had a solidarity potluck. We had a Dance for Syria event organized by Sashiko Nishuki. I mean, she did an amazing job. She's a Japanese flamingo dancer. She organized an event where a lot of different dancers gave their time, danced for an audience. All the proceedings went to SAMS. So we also, you know, collaborate with the Women's March, the Caravan of Love. We co-sponsored and advertised movies for Arrive Ministries, Mizna and Sam's. The latest one was Little Gandhi, which is nominated for an Oscar this year.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so Sam's really did a good job in advertising and sponsoring that at the university.
What is Little Gandhi about?
The whole situation in Syria, narrated by Syrian activists. So they are abroad Syria and inside of Syria. It's talking about the nonviolent movement that happened during, you know, the siege and during one of the most dangerous times in Syria. It talks about a young man who just didn't want to face soldiers with guns. And it's just, you know, face your enemy with love, with kindness.
So Syria is one of those countries on this travel ban, also known as the Muslim ban. What are you hearing from Syrian refugees and families from Syria, in Syria, or even in Minnesota? How are they feeling right now?
Of course, scared. I mean, those who are here, they weren't affected by the ban. But I mean, it wasn't really rosy and cheeky before. I mean, even under the Obama administration, I mean, we had a lot of years where no Syrian refugee was welcome. I mean, there are millions of Syrian refugees in Europe and in Lebanon and in Jordan. And so even in Sudan, there are a lot of Syrian refugees. And the United States during those years just took about 2,000 to 5,000. So that was really...
Not a lot.
Not a lot and very surprising. So what has happened then, the last year of Obama, is that he raised this number to 10,000.
Okay.
And then they started talking that they want to raise it more because the United States hasn't really done enough. You know, I personally know a family who was, they were living in the Emirates and they were getting letters from the embassy that, yeah, you know, you're vetted, years of interviews and documents and everything, and you'll have a visa to go to the United States as a refugee. So what he started doing is he sold all his furniture, he quit his job, his daughter also the university, and they were really excited. And then when the talks about the ban came, then everything was on hold. They were really devastated. I mean, they sold everything and they quit everything just because they were hoping to come here. It's some form of racism. And those people, they're in another part of the world where they can't easily come to the United States. So they have to go through, you know, the embassy, to this through the CIA, to the FBI, and so many agencies. They have to be vetted, like completely vetted. And those are families, you know, who just want a new life, a new start, new hope. So, I mean, and just to tell them, no, you can't come because you might be terrorists. I mean, that was just heartbreaking. So the stop of the ban, they were able to come here actually. But now you have the ban actually in effect, that will affect now.
So what should we be doing as Minnesotans, Americans, to stand in solidarity with the Syrian people?
Well, you can start, you know, educating yourself and educating others. Those are families. Those are, you know, refugees who have been living in the camps, whether it's in Turkey or in Lebanon or elsewhere. I mean, when they want to come to the United States, they're doing that for their families. They're not doing that because they say, yeah, we're going to get free healthcare or something. I mean, this is the United States. You really have to start from the beginning.
Yeah.
You have to do it on your own. You can't draw comparisons with Europe, where they actually get a lot of help from the government. When they choose the United States, they know that they have to really work hard. And we also have to remind Americans and Minnesotans, we are all kind of some sort of immigrants here. Whether it's Ireland, whether it's Germany, whether it's Sweden, whether it's Mexico. I mean, we're all immigrants. And some of a large part of the population were refugees themselves.
You mentioned that it's harder to be a refugee in the United States versus a country in Europe. Like, what are some differences?
I mean, the refugees who come here, they only get 2 months help. I mean, from whoever sponsored them, whether it's a local church or so. They get 2 months help with, you know, renting a home. And then during that 2 months, you gotta apply for a job. Whatever it is. I mean, even if you were a scholar, or if you were an educator, or you have a professor's degree or whatever. No, we don't care. You have to apply for a job, even if it's at Walmart or whatever. Mm. So you have to work on your own. You have to finance everything on your own. And there is some limited help, of course. We all know, like, food stamps. But other than that, you have to work. You have to pay taxes like anyone else. I mean, in Europe, they have it a bit easier, where they get financial help, such as, you know, an apartment. I mean, I'm not going to say it's all rosy and everything. Oh, no. I mean, I've seen those housings.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as beautiful as you might think. They get healthcare like any other European. Mm-hmm. But even in Germany, it's not like, well, you can stay a refugee forever, or an immigrant not doing anything. No, I mean, they have to sign up immediately also for German classes, which is, I mean, this is amazing. This has to be done. I mean, Syrians don't want to sit and get government help all their life. No, they're hardworking people.
Yeah.
And Syrians has a lot of educated people too.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, give us a chance. Give us a chance. Unfortunately, the bureaucracy in Germany and other European countries is far worse than the United States.
Mm.
So even if they have some kind of training in area or some kind of background, they can't do anything with it. That's a wrong thing to do. I think it's the best thing is just, you know, to enroll them in German classes and just give them, you know, simple jobs that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't rely on government's help.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what, you know, Germany is now doing. Somehow they realized, well, it's going to take a little bit longer. So providing them with simple jobs.
There's a lot of psychological trauma and sometimes even physical trauma that some of these refugees are facing that they also have to overcome once they come here. I mean, there's a cultural shift. I mean, there's this feeling of, will I be able to go back home? Is this going to be temporary? What are you learning about that? Because what I'm trying to get at is, like, everybody thinks, like, it's easy to just move here. It's hard. The transition is hard, psychologically, mentally, emotionally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, as I told you, you know, Syrians were always welcoming refugees in their own country, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And although it was a dictatorship and they didn't have freedom, they somehow were content with all of that. They had just, you know, simple lives. And Syrians are very, you know, happy people. The psychological shift then that, hey, we are now refugees. We have to pack everything and get out of our homes. And the homes over there, it's not easy to rent as here, you know, in the United States or in Europe, where you can just rent and you have rights and everything. No, over there, it's either you inherit the house from your parents, or you have to pay all your savings, if you have any,
mm-hmm.
to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to buy it, everything in cash.
Mm-hmm.
So losing that all your heritage and all the savings, you know, that you worked so hard for, leaving all that, I mean, that's just, you know, the toughest thing ever. So that psychological shift that we have to leave everything behind, then living in another country where you don't know the language, you don't know the culture, it's just, you know, nobody decides just, yeah, I'm going to be a refugee.
How can people get involved with CISPOs? Like, is there an event coming up that we can attend? How do we educate ourselves more?
Well, you can go to our website, CISPOs.org, mm-hmm. and find out, you know, what we do. What I'm doing right now, personally, and also, you know, with CISPO's help and SAMS, Syrian American Medical Society, is that I'm helping a child in Homs, Syria, mm-hmm. who was affected by the war and who was a refugee herself, but was one of those who are internally mm-hmm. displaced, get a cochlear implant. Yes. Mm-hmm. She lost her earring because of all the bombs and the rockets and everything. So it affected her hearing. She lost it when she was just a baby. Unfortunately, because they had to move, you know, from one place to another, she never got, you know, proper therapy. You know, neither mm-hmm. speech therapy nor psychological therapy nor any hearing aid. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find, you know, funds for a cochlear implant. And you can go to GoFundMe and then just search for cochlear implant child. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see the picture of a beautiful 5-year-old kid with mm-hmm. some glasses. And I hope, you know, we can do that and I will update you on that.
Okay.
So if you can, you know, challenge your friends. I mean, we just need 100 people, everybody, each person, $25. We have 2,500. And again, another 100 yeah. people. So it's very expensive to do.
Wow.
So we still need $7,000. Yeah. I mean, I hope, you know, whoever listens can help with that.
What advice do you have for Muslim women?
My advice is that, you know, we need to unite more. First, of course, we have to admit that we're not perfect, mm-hmm. neither as humans or as parents. But what we can do is just, you know, strive just to be better role models for our children. I mean, we do everything for our children.
Mm-hmm.
And teach them, maybe we can help one family or one person just to make their days better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what drives us. So first of all, we have to admit that we're not perfect. You know? The second thing is that just we have to unite. I mean, Muslim women sometimes are hard on themselves and hard on each other. So the ultra-conservative side against the ultra-liberal side. So there's just a lot of name-calling. You're not Muslim enough. Or then on the other side, well, you still live in the Middle Ages. Well, mm-hmm. that's, you know, put that all aside, just unite and find common ground and we can work together instead of against each other. We can unite on so many things that are just for pure humane reasons, like helping the homeless or single mothers or whatever conflict is going on internationally or in the United States.
Work together for some common good.
Exactly.
That's great advice. Well, Rehab, I really enjoyed our time together. We're at the end of our episode and our show today.
All right, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks a lot.
And until next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you to Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota for funding the Shiro's Project. To learn more about Shiro's and Reviving Sisterhood, visit us at www.revivingsisterhood.org. Find us on social media at Reviving Sisterhood on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.